Yes, welcome back to the show here on World Football Daily. I'm delighted today to be joined by a man to break down all the big news coming out of world football, especially a look ahead to Real Madrid against Manchester United, and of course the look back at Madrid beating Barca in El Clasico this weekend. Mr. Phil Shane of beIN Sports is joining us on the line today. Phil, how are you today, mate?
Wonderful, Oliver, and a little chilly down here, but I have a feeling that everything that's going to be happening over the next week or so probably keep all of us soccer fans nice and warm.
Yeah, I think we all want to stay indoors and keep our eyes glued to the TV at the moment and stay in the warm with all the football that's coming up this this week, man. It's a phenomenal week of Champions League football, as I said. Real Madrid taking on Manchester United, beating Barca with almost the reserve side is like the perfect way to go into this game in terms of keeping confidence high at Madrid.
I agree 100%, and it's amazing how quickly life can turn around. Obviously, for Barcelona, might be headed in the same direction and maybe even picking up a bit of speed, but we can worry about that later. From Real Madrid's perspective, amazing how quickly the world turns. A week ago, it looked almost disastrous. I mean, they're in danger of falling 20 points back in the race behind Barcelona, the stumble against United at home, and then the cup win to move on to the final, and now the victory in the league, as you mentioned, with reserves. All of a sudden, you're thinking that maybe, just maybe, that Cristiano Ronaldo can go back to Old Trafford and, I guess, turn the theater dreams into a bit of a nightmare for United. It's not definite. It's not possible. Not impossible, but I kind of have a feeling when you look at United, the way they play, and you look at the type of manager that Alex Ferguson is, I'm not going to say it's going to come back and bite him, but he's not the type to go out and play anti-football. They're going to take some chances, even though a 0-0 would be good enough to advance. And as we've seen, there might not be a better counter-attacking team on the planet. So I think Real Madrid's going to get their chances. Are they able to take advantage of them? And at the same point, are they able to shut down what is proving to be a still potent United attack?
We've got this Real Madrid side, which handled Barcelona very well this weekend. How were they able to shut down Barca's attack? Because as we've said, playing this kind of reserve team, you'd have expected Barca to have dominated them this weekend.
Well, they did, everywhere but the scoreboard. And I think that that's really what we've started to see. A bit going back to Celtic, we've seen it through Malaga. Sociedad had the first success in league. Valencia, Sevilla. I mean, some of these teams coming very close. And then I think, if anything, Milan showed the determination that's needed that that United followed up on. It obviously takes a very fit team. It takes a very disciplined team, but it also takes a team that's not afraid to take advantage of the opportunities that are there. I mean, obviously, 0-0, the end of a penalty kick, it's a crap shootout. So sooner or later, you got to take advantage. And I think we saw that from Milan. I think we saw that from United. And I think we'll see a similar game plan from Ferguson and United. I know some people still call it like parking the bus, as Mourinho did for Chelsea. I know it might not be the best picture, but almost for me, it's like a snapping turtle. They have their shell around the area they want to protect, but at the same point, they're not afraid to stick their neck out and take a bite every so often. And I think that United and Milan showed that it's not just possible, but almost definite that this Barcelona side can be frustrated. I think there needs to be some serious introspection for Barcelona in regards to what's going to happen now. Is this the end of an era? Is this just the standard speed bump that a lot of these teams go through every year? And I guarantee you that everything that's going on around Tito Villanova and his illness and recuperation is not helping the matter. And it's going to be interesting to see how much longer the patience of Sandro Rosell lasts. I know they have the league practically wrapped up, but if there's an embarrassment against Milan in the second leg, I have a feeling that the gears are going to start to turn. So from a Real Madrid's perspective, I think they probably wish there were still five games extra left in the season because they might still have a chance for a treble. But they're going to focus in on the double and especially La Decima. As far as Barcelona goes, I think it's, like I said, introspection, licking the wounds a little bit. There's still a ton of talent on that team, but
there does need to be maybe even a bit more than tinkering, but some changes that need to be made.
When you look at the Real Madrid side that played, are any of these players this weekend, have they done enough to turn Mourinho's head maybe for the game coming up this week and tomorrow night against United? I mean, we saw Morata play very well. Kaká's done well. Of course, Pepe is returning to this side and Varane's still around about as well. Who's done enough to maybe chuck their name into at least be on the bench this week at Old Trafford?
Well, I think if anything, we've seen the roster expand a bit. I do think you look at the likes of an Essien, a Kaká, even lesser extent a Morata as being very situational. But I think that Varane has progressed to the point where he's arguably the best defender they have. You look at the cup match, a lot of people were saying, well, he's done well so far, but this is going to be so much pressure and expect to see him crumble. If anything, he blossomed even more. Not just the goal that he scored, but defensively, he was outstanding, arguably man of the match. So I would not be surprised to see him there. It's not as though Rooney is Messi. They played different styles, different positions on the field. So I'm interested to see what happens with Pepe if he does play or if he sits on the bench in reserve. What they ended up doing was a very quick adjustment by pushing Essien out to the right back and putting Pepe back to where Mourinho likes him against Barcelona in the midfield. And I don't think you can do that against United. And at the same point, I don't think you really want to risk taking apart the duo of Sergio Ramos and Rafa Varane at this point. So I would not be surprised to see Arbeloa out there. I mean, he's kind of been a bit nasty at times, which is, if anything, I think made him a more difficult defender. It's going to be interesting to see how they do come out, but I think that you're going to see, as they say in all those detective movies and backing all the way to Casablanca, I mean, you're going to see the usual suspects. It's going to be Ronaldo. It's going to be probably Benzema at this point, although you wonder, since he played, maybe they rotate back to Higuain, but in my mind, they're practically interchangeable. I think you look at those top 14 or 15 players for Real Madrid, and there's not much of a drop-off anywhere. And even when you go a little deeper in the right situation, those players can shine too, and Mourinho is an expert at that.
Overall, with these El Clasicos, I mean, we always have the build-up as being, you know, the greatest game on the planet this weekend coming up, El Clasico, but has the grudge between these two sides boiled over to a point where it's really ruining the game? We saw a host of fouls and, of course, the bookings and the frustration at the end from Barca. I mean, are these really, these aren't the epitome of what football is, surely, with the number of horrible challenges that we see going on in them?
It's probably actually a little calmer than it was a couple of years ago and maybe even into last year. I mean, it was kind of funny where Iker Casillas was talking about the need to kind of decaffeinate the rivalry. But that was also heading into a World Cup year where he wanted to try and make sure the Spanish team didn't tear itself apart. Mm. That's also part of what put him, if you believe some of the rumors, a bit on the outs of Jose Mourinho, who probably doesn't mind an us-versus-them mentality. So in regards to this year, I think the first one happened relatively early. The fact it's a semifinal in the cup, you get your two head-to-heads. And I think Barcelona was kind of maybe waiting for the second leg. Then this last one in league, you're already talking about, like I said, nearly a 20-point deficit. So I think that maybe the spotlight is still on the game, but it's not as bright a light due to various other situations. At the same point, as you point out, once the whistle blows, once they start playing, these are still 22 of the best players on earth that are out there on the pitch going at each other tooth and nail. And when you do have a bit of controversy at the end, it's obviously understood when they lose their cool. I know that there were some chippy plays. As I mentioned, Arbeloa kind of has become a master of that over the last year or two. However, I think that the real picture that kind of lasts, as you point out, that explosion of Barcelona at the end has to do more with the fact that Pérez Lassa has proven to be equally blind, hasn't called a penalty against either side since 1998. So I think Barcelona had a reason to argue, a reason to blow up a bit, but it also goes to show the crisis, I think, that is bubbling under the surface and starting to emerge in Barcelona. They thought that if they could get what was a deserved penalty, salvage the draw, that that would maybe start to right the ship and they could turn in the right direction. But now, again, what's happened since the calendar turned, a record start for Barcelona, and now into a tailspin that probably is getting close to records as well. It's going to be interesting to find out if Jordi Roda is able to turn it around, and even if when Tito Villanova comes back, if this team is going to be just a shell of itself and maybe coast into port with the Liga title, but dreaming of what might have been.
It'll be interesting to see how the La Liga title race ends up. It's not over yet, according to Phil. Phil, of course, you're a world soccer fan, an American as well, and obviously delighted, I'm sure, to see Major League Soccer kicking off this weekend. The Galaxy have really set out their stall, have they not, with that opening day win?
Absolutely. Yeah, I know Mike McGee is getting all the plaudits, deservedly so. I know Chris Wondolowski and even Alan Gordon got a look-see from Jurgen Klinsmann last year for their scoring prowess in MLS. And I think that even though in my mind he's not quite that player, there's a certain knack of goal scoring, that nose towards goal that McGee has developed and seems to be polishing even more. The guy that impressed me most for LA, though, at least until the end when the game was out of reach and he started looking for his own stat sheet, was Robbie Keane, talking about quite the playmaker. So it's kind of interesting. After early 20-minute jitters for LA where they looked rather average, they turned it on as the game progressed. The question is, I mean, does this say more about the Fire than it does about LA? So it's going to be interesting to find out, but I think that this is going to be a team that's going to be contending, but as Bruce Arena proved, the regular season doesn't really matter to them. They're just going to try and find the way, find the places to get their points, make sure they make the playoffs in relatively comfortable fashion, and then turn it on at the end, which is why I think that Arena has not had too much of a problem in regards to the whole Landon Donovan situation. But I think, as we saw yesterday, if Landon comes back, it'll just strengthen an already solid team.
We talked about before the weekend about the impact of obviously Beckham being gone and the whole media hype that loses focus on Major League Soccer because of that, and questions about the Galaxy as well, how they go with life after Beckham. Important then that we had the Galaxy with the big win, this thriller up in Portland between Portland and New York, and some other great scorelines as well to keep the kind of momentum going for Major League Soccer in the sports media.
I think it's definitely true. However, what was going on at Chivas, even though I think that the team played much better than the 3-0 scoreline, is a black eye MLS didn't really need to give itself. There's obviously a lot of turmoil going on. There's a transition with a lot of new players coming in, the new coach coming in, the new ownership solidifying. And this should have been, this opening round, focused in on great attendances, even 18,000 in Dallas for a decent game. You talk about what was going on in Portland, Seattle, Los Angeles. I mean, this should have been a celebration, but there is that little bit of a black eye that's, I think, going to carry through the regular season. What is going to happen with Chivas USA? Is it going to have to be anything short of a rebrand or even perhaps a relocation? Still, I think that should not take away from what was an overwhelming positive start to the new campaign. And I think we're due to see even more. I think some of these additions that have been made in this past off season are not just for name factor or wow factor. I mean, Diego Valeri is definitely the real deal. I think Raul Fernandez, the keeper for Dallas, is arguably going to be the best keeper in the league. And if Seattle gets Obafemi Martins, that's the type of guy that can rack up goals galore. So I think over the last couple of seasons, MLS has stagnated just a bit, kind of riding that wave of David Beckham. And now that that wave has subsided, they're looking to make a few waves elsewhere. And it was an exciting start. Now the question is, can they keep it up?
Just finally then, Phil, on the Chivas USA situation, do you think it is as drastic as needing a relocation? Where do you stand on that? What do they need to do to rebuild that franchise almost?
Well, it comes down to a mistake at the outset, in my mind. And I know I'm not the one with the money. I'm not the one that has the quote-unquote Chivas pride. I do understand that. However, it's a similar situation that we saw here in Miami at the start. It was just a problem they did not need at a time they did not need it. And from a Miami perspective, I'm talking something as simple as the colors that they chose. I mean, there was an Argentine boss, and they ended up choosing the blue and gold, which obviously represented Boca Juniors. Why would you do that when there's obviously fans of River Plate, of Independiente, et cetera, and even fans from Brazil? And it seems to be something that needed to focus in on the local identity rather than to try and piggyback off something from somewhere else where there's already going to be some dissent. I mean, if you're an America fan, if you're a Cruz Azul fan, why would you end up putting on the Chivas colors, let alone if you're an Anglo fan, why would you want to put on the colors of a team that is so synonymous with celebrating Mexican identity? So it seemed to be a problem they did not need to make for themselves. And I think it's a problem that's going to take a rebranding, arguably a relocation to get away from the Galaxy shadow, either to the Valley, either to San Diego, or perhaps even further away to some of these other teams, other locations like in Atlanta, Orlando, or Miami, that are going to be fighting to try and get a team but might have to wait in line after New York's second side. So it can work in L.A. It's just going to take a lot of effort and a lot of digging back out of that hole that they've already dug for themselves. So the question is it worth it, or would it be better just to pack up the bags and move somewhere else, like San Jose ended up doing to Houston, and start from square one?
It's a very interesting situation down there for Chivas USA, and one that I know Rafa is convinced they should just move down to San Diego instead. Only time will tell, Phil. It's an absolute pleasure.
Well, but Oliver, the one point to consider also, and I don't, maybe you could bring Rafa on for the next segment, but I think that they might have missed that boat too, because you take a look at what Cholos has done, and that's a team that has built a fan base from Tijuana all the way north, almost into Los Angeles. So I think that the time to even move to San Diego might have passed at this point.
Wow. Well, in that case, though, I mean, you talk about places like Atlanta and stuff, but surely with the ties to the Mexican football, you want to keep this side almost kind of close to the border, if you will, to keep that kind of almost Mexican authenticity to it.
If you're going to stay in the Southern California area, or anywhere around the border, even like to a Phoenix, et cetera, I mean, I agree with you. You do need to try and go with the more blue-collar, immigrant soccer base that's already there, but without alienating certain large segments of that, or a lot of the Anglo fans that maybe just get along with the glitz and glamour of David Beckham and Landon Donovan and the LA Galaxy and everything that represents. I think there is an opportunity there, but it's going to take a rethink and a rebranding. And I don't know if you can basically just say, okay, today we're Chivas USA and tomorrow we're the Southern California Aguilas, or if you want to do that, that represents South America. But you know what I mean? It's going to take more than just a name change. I think it needs to take a whole overall philosophy. And again, the question is it worth it to try and have to fill in the giant hole that they've already dug, or would it be better just to go to fresh land and start there? And the situation is at this point, obviously Vergara is so connected with Chivas and Guadalajara that I think the only way that this happens is if there's a change in ownership.
Well, we will have to wait and see on that. I'm sure they won't want to be continuing down the path they're going at the moment. Of course, suffering that big 3-0 loss on the weekend for the opening day of the season for Chivas USA at home. Phil, it's an absolute pleasure to have you on the show once again, mate. We need to get you on sooner and more, far more often than we already do. But we really appreciate you taking out your time from being sport and joining us today on the show.
Always a pleasure, guys. Thanks, Oliver.
Thanks so much. Phil Shane there joining us here on World Football Daily, kicking off the Monday show with a fantastic look at El Clasico and, of course, at Major League Soccer as well, and getting into the Chivas USA's problems of where they're positioned, the shadow of the Galaxy that they do seem to live in, and, of course, what can they do to rebuild, reignite the flame around that franchise. You can follow Phil on Twitter, at Phil Shane. That's at capital P, lowercase H-I-L, capital S, lowercase capital S, lowercase C-H-O-E-N. Wow, I'm really struggling today. Already off on one. Unbelievable. I do apologise about that. Phil Shane there joining us here on World Football Daily. We're going to take a quick break. I'm going to get my head sorted We're going to have our next guest right up here on World Football Day.
We know you love that free bit from us here at WFD. Now go and sign up and get access to a huge archive of our content and interviews and download the best daily podcast in America. Go to worldfootballdaily.com and become a member today.